Welcome back once again to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today, a live show right from West Virginia University that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice. And the man who makes sense of all that for you is on right now, Lee Silverman. Hey, Lee.
Hey, thanks, Paul. I am your host, Lee Silverman, and we are happy to have you with us for our discussion on the persuasion code. Is there really part of the brain that decides? Most of our attempts to persuade are doomed to fail because the brains of our audience are wired to automatically reject messages that disrupt their attention. Most people believe that persuasion is more art than science because there has not been a single complete scientific model of persuasion. Today, we will learn that persuasion can be linked to brain science and that the primal brain of your audience drives their decision-making process. We will also discover what can stimulate that primal organ and how this translates into critical questions needed to address and maximize the probability to persuade. Joining us momentarily is our guest, Patrick Renvoiset. Patrick is the co-founder and chief persuasion officer at SalesBrain. He is an expert in complex sales, and his background includes having been in charge of business development at both Silicon Graphics and LinuxCare. While marketing supercomputers and multi-million dollar software solutions to some of the world's most brilliant scientists at NASA, Boeing, Shell, Airbus, BMW, and more, he became fascinated with the human brain. Patrick began investigating a scientific model to explain how humans use their brain to make buying decisions. He spent 2 years researching and formalizing the first 100% science-based persuasion model called NeuroMap. In 2002, Patrick and his business partner, Dr. Christoph Morin, co-authored the first book on neuromarketing and published NeuroMap. This proprietary, award-winning methodology has been used for the past 16 years to help over 6,000 companies worldwide scientifically persuade. Patrick, we're so happy to have you join us. Welcome to Marketing Communications Today. Let's jump right into this. Tell us about the primal brain and why this should matter to marketers.
For a long time, we thought that, you know, the decision-making process was made by one pounded organ. But a few years ago, researchers started to realize that we don't have one self, we have two selves. There is on one end the rational us, and there is also the primal us. And researchers like Daniel Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize in Economy in 2002, we're able to demonstrate that in reality, the decision-making process is driven by our primal self, by what we call the primal brain. So what's been really critical for us to realize is that that primal brain follows some rules of rationality. In other words, we make irrational decisions, but there is some rationality in how irrational we are. So the whole purpose of our work is to establish some rules of rationality to explain how this primal brain works.
Okay. So, as you mentioned, rational decisions, is it true that humans rarely make rational decisions? And can you tell us more about cognitive biases?
In fact, another researcher by the name of Dan Ariely wrote a book called Predictably Irrational. And there is no such thing as a rational decision. It does not exist. In fact, one of the greatest experts on the world of decisions and emotions in the brain, his professor, his name is Antonio Damasio. And Damasio demonstrated that we make emotional decisions and then we rationalize them, not vice versa. So again, there is no such thing as a rational decision. There are 188 rules of irrationalities, if you want, and we call that biases. Rule that explains how and why we make these irrational decisions. But again, what is new that we're revealing in our book is how to connect those rules of irrationalities with a simple process that everybody can follow if they want to maximize their capacity to influence others. So maybe I'll give you one example of these rules of irrationalities or the cognitive biases. In fact, the one I'm going to talk about is one of the oldest, and it's called the recency primacy effect. Here's what happens. If we were rational decision-making machines, and if our brain was processing information linearly, we would remember things linearly. In other words, if I was going to give you a list of 10 words, there should be no reason for you to not remember the words in the middle. However, because of that rule of recency primacy, if I give you a list of 10 words to remember, you will tend to remember the words at the beginning. That's the primacy effect. At the end, that's the recency effect. And people will tend to forget everything in the middle. And this has implication. I'll give you a very famous quote from George Lucas. George Lucas, the famous movie maker, said, if you want to make a good movie, you want to create a hot opening, a hot close, and just don't screw up in the middle. That's what he said. And if you are a business person, how can you use this to your benefit? Well, what that means is, for example, we've all heard that you have only one chance to make a first impression. Yes, that's the primacy effect. You know, it's so hard to overcome that first impression that you make on people. And thing, the last words that you're going to say are going to be more present in the mind of people. So you have to be really careful in how you close your arguments. So again, this was just one simple example, but we have 188 of those rules of irrationality. So again, what we're revealing in our book, and to my knowledge, this is the first time that it is done through a complete scientific model. We are explaining, we are linking all these rules of irrationality, and we are helping people. We're providing a simple step-by-step process that will maximize your probability to use all these biases to your advantage.
Okay, that was a beautiful illustration as well. Very easy to understand with the beginning and end being paramount. I understand that neuroscientists and neuropsychologists have known about the primal brain's role in decision-making for about two decades. Why has this knowledge not really reached the business world?
Two separate worlds. On one hand, you have the world of academics. These are people that spend a research budget, that are looking, I think they write books, they get other people to get their PhDs. It's one world. And then there is the world of business. In fact, you know, today there is about 70,000 books on marketing. There are 90,000 books on sales. There are about 20,000 books on neuroscience and neuropsychology. Defies all this. Our objective in life is to create a bridge between those two worlds, which do not communicate very well together.
Okay. And it sounds like there's very fertile ground for this in those who are doing marketing and better understanding this primal reptilian brain that we all have. In mentioning, as you did, books being out there, in your book, you also talk about neuromarketing. What can you share with us about that?
So about 15 years ago, we started to see a new branch of marketing called neuromarketing. And what we do in neuromarketing is, we ask people what do you want, but we're not going to pay attention to their self-reported measures. Instead, what we will do is we will measure directly on our bodies various physiological changes. And those physiological changes allow us to poke directly into their unconscious, if you want. It's an unfiltered version of what people truly want. So we use different modalities to do that. Some modalities include we measure how people's skin changes resistance. In other words, when people get excited or when they get sad, it changes the resistance of your skin. We also measure the emotion that people are displaying, not again based on what they say. Instead, we measure it based on how they contract the 43 muscles on their faces. We measure their change of tone of voice, because your voice is controlled by a very specific area of the brain, and it takes a professional liar to not change his tone of voice as he's lying. We use EEG, we use EKG. So we use all these different modalities to get a much better picture about what people truly want. And that's what neuromarketing is.
Well, that's really fascinating. And thinking about marketing and other tools that have historically been used, if we think of focus groups, if we think of surveys, interviews, these things have the potential deficit in which someone could be doing us lip service and trying to tell us what they think we want to hear, perhaps as opposed to what they're thinking, or maybe they don't even necessarily know what they're thinking. But these tools you mentioned seem to be able to measure and unlock what's really there, whether they're aware of it or not, if I understand correctly.
Yes, it's using a direct way of doing these measurements as opposed to using people's self-reported measures where they have a hard time to express using words what they really feel about a product. And as you said, there is another aspect, which is we know also that, for example, you know, imagine if I'm going to answer a few questions about Coca-Cola. We know that people tend to give the answers that the questioner is asking for. In other words, we know people try to please the people that are questioning them.
Well, I think if I understand from Paul correctly, we're looking at taking a break and we'll be coming back here in just a few moments. So please stand by for us. We'll resume our talk with Patrick Renvoise on the Persuasion Code.
All right. And as we digest all that information he's been giving us here, on a brief mention about West Virginia University's online data marketing communications program. It's the first graduate program of its kind, focusing on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The data marketing communications program prepares you for your career by learning those innovative tactics from award-winning faculty and leading thought leaders like our host and our guest here today. You can learn more at dmc.wvu for West Virginia University. dmc.wvu.edu. All right, you guys are in pretty deep here. This is some pretty heavy stuff here. My pen is running out of ink. I'm writing so many notes down here. We'll pick it back up.
This is our talk on the persuasion code. Is there really part of the brain that decides? And our guest is Patrick Renvoise. Patrick, we've talked about the importance of the primal brain in marketing, but how does one reach it?
So we've established that those 188 cognitive biases can be summarized into what we call stimulus. And there are, we found six of them. In other words, because it's a brain that's ancient, it's a brain that's approximately 500 million years old. And if you want to compare it with the rational brain, you know, the rational brain is only about 5 to 10 million years old. So this primal brain is really ancient. And because, you know, internet did not exist back then, those stimulus, there are only six simple ways you can stimulate that brain. So let me review them very briefly. The first one is, it's a brain that is expecting a personal stimulus. In other words, it's a brain that is completely selfish. It does not know compassion at all. It's a brain that's all about me, me, and me. The second stimulus is contrast. It's a brain that needs contrast to decide. And here is what happens. You know, a typical brain processes about 11 million bits of information per second. Unfortunately, you can only focus your attention on about 50 bits per second. So how do you decide among 11 million bits per second which one you're going to pay attention to? Well, you use contrast. You know, an example of this is if you're driving in the night and everything is dark and all of a sudden a light flashes on your right side, instantly, almost like a reflex function, your head will turn towards the flashing light. Why? Because there is a lot of contrast between that flashing light and the dark around. So it's telling your brain, well, there is a potential danger there. I have to put my attention there. Right? So to trigger that primal brain, you need to have contrast in your stimulus. Third stimulus is tangible. Tangible, that means that it's a brain that only understands very down-to-earth, very simple stimulus. For example, it's a brain that does not understand something like, we are a leading provider of, and we provide easy-to-use, scalable, modular architecture. Why? Because all these concepts are highly intangible. In fact, it's a brain that the expert also called the pre-verbal brain. It's a brain that works that appeared way before we started to use words. You know, written words are only about 10,000 years old. Spoken words are about 50,000 years old, and that primal brain is 500 million years old. So it's not even the same scale. So it's a brain that doesn't even understand words. Why? Because words are not tangible enough. And that's the third stimulus, tangible. The fourth stimulus is, it's a brain that is visual. So, you know, we've known this for a long time. A great portion of all brain activity is actually about processing images. And if you look at the architecture of the brain, apparently we had eyes before we had a rational brain. In fact, a lot of animals, most animals, have eyes. And that means that the primal brain existed, you know, has been existing for a long, long time. And that optic nerve is actually very fast. The optic nerve in the brain provides about 50 times the amount of information that the ear is bringing to the brain. So fundamentally, the brain is an image processing machine. So making your stimulus visual really helps your audience understand what you're talking about. The next stimulus is beginning and end. So just like I talked about the recency primacy effect, that particular bias translates directly into one of the stimulus. In other words, when you communicate with people, they will remember the beginning, they will remember the end, and they will forget everything in between. And finally, the last stimulus is emotion. In other words, if you communicate with people with purely rational information, and there is absolutely zero emotional component to it, people will have a really hard time to decide. So again, there are only six ways you can trigger or you can stimulate that primal brain. And this is a direct application of the 188 cognitive biases that I talked about.
And as you mentioned the aspect of contrast, I had the pleasure recently of watching your TED Talk, and I would urge our listeners to search for this on YouTube if they haven't yet seen it. And there were some beautiful examples of contrast on there that the audience was just struck by, as well as I was. So having only six ways or stimuli that can reach the primal brain, what does it mean for savvy marketers?
What we've done is we've translated further those six stimuli into four steps. Now, I will review briefly those four steps. But the first step is you have to diagnose the pain of your audience. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to take a very, very simple example to illustrate all these different steps. So imagine you're trying to sell water. Most people that are trying to sell water, they start by talking about the water, how fresh the water is, how pure it is, etc. But the best and most effective way to start to influence an audience is not by talking, but it is by listening to the people, and it is about listening about what we call their pain. And their pain are going to be conscious or unconscious negative emotion that your audience experiences. And the notion of diagnosing the pain, you need to do that because fundamentally that primal brain is personal, it's selfish, it only cares about me, me, me. So again, if you're trying to sell me water and you start by talking to me about your water, you display a very selfish behavior. Whereas if you start to ask me, oh, you know, what are you thirsty for? And do you have a headache? Maybe you need to drink more water. So if you show me some level of compassion, if you start to ask me questions, if you put me at the center of your discourse, then I will be willing to open up to the idea of starting to buy from you. So the first step in our process, diagnose the pain. Then the second step, and again, you need to do that because that primal brain is personal. The second step is about how do you use contrast? And the second step is you need to differentiate your claims. Because here is what happens. If you're selling water, most likely you have competitors that are also trying to sell the same water to the same customers. And if the customer does not see the difference between your water and all your competitors' waters, then you're not maximizing your probability to sell. So you have to find something different about your solution, and you have to find that difference at all cost. So I want to take you to another example here. Now, let's imagine you're trying to sell home-delivered pizza. What do you think is the number one pain of people who buy home-delivered pizza?
I'm guessing hunger.
Well, hunger, interestingly enough, I would not call it a pain. I would call it a need. In other words, people are aware that they are hungry, right? That hunger drives their behavior, but it's almost at the conscious level. But there is something at the unconscious level that drives people's behavior to buy home-delivered pizza even more predictably. And let me tell you a story. 35 years ago, there was a small pizza shop in the area of Detroit. And when they tried to figure out what was the number one pain of the average consumer of pizza in our country, they discovered that that pain was the anxiety of not knowing when the pizza would arrive. As a result, they chose a slogan, and their slogan was 30 minutes or less, or it's free. And as you recognize, that little pizza place is known as Domino's, and they became number one in the business. Now, they didn't become number one in the business because they made the best pizza. They became number one in the business because they identified the pain, and then they built a complete organization around that notion that they would be the best at eliminating that pain. In other words, the pizza is not the business. The pizza is just an accessory to the business. And Domino's is a FedEx organization. So that's the pain. And what now is the claim of Domino? Well, Domino's claim is not so much about the quality of the pizza, but it's about their promise that they will deliver it to you in 30 minutes or less. So the claim of Domino's has nothing to do with the pizza itself, but it has everything to do with how quickly they will deliver it. And why did they choose this? Because they realized early in the development of their company that the anxiety of not knowing when the pizza will arrive, which is, again, as you can tell, it's a deep emotion in the brain of the audience, that was driving their behavior. So it's the second step. After you've diagnosed the pain, you need to differentiate your claim. And you need to do that again, because that triptylion is sensitive to contrast.
Yes, yes. And that differentiating yourself from competition is so important throughout marketing, of course. To shift gears for a moment, in the remaining time that we have, why is it so important to have a scientific model of persuasion?
Well, it's important because, first of all, then you can apply a process. In other words, you can get much better, much more predictable results in what you do. So that's the positive side for the marketeers. Now, for the consumer, it also is very important because that allows the consumer to be way more educated about how other people are trying to influence them. I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, but I still find myself from time to time making completely emotional decisions. So when that happens, I analyze why is it that the message of that particular person was able to get to me faster and more effectively than anybody else. So being able as a consumer when people are trying to manipulate you is critical. So again, you know, just like in physics, physicists are trying to unify all the forces in the world, and they're trying to come up with one single theory of how forces work in the world. And being able to do this for sales and marketing, I believe, is equally important because it will make sure that people no longer buy stuff they don't need.
Okay, very good. Well, in brief, would you like to mention the book that you have out if others would like to pick up a copy and check it out?
Yes, so the book is titled The Persuasion Code. I am one of the co-author with my friend and partner, Christoph Morin. And the book is available on Amazon. It's available in many other places. You know, the book was about 2 years in the making, and it's a sequel to our first book, which was titled Neuromarketing, Understanding the Buy Button Inside the Brain. Again, it's a book that is all about science, so we're not asking people to trust us. We're giving people scientific facts, and then they can make the decisions for themselves. But our conclusion was that, you know, even though we are in 2018, we still make completely irrational decisions. By making sure that people can learn about how irrational we are, we believe that we can make the world a better place.
Well, that's wonderful, Patrick. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. This has been The Persuasion Code. Is there really part of the brain that decides? And I think the answer to that is yes. Paul, I think we go back to you, my friend.
You've been listening to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Boy, we're stumbling through this one here today, but hang in there. Right here on the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.